Hello and welcome to the College Football Experience Podcast. My name is David Capel. I'm joined by Kent Brown for the championship week preview. You might have heard our voices a couple days ago for our emergency pod with the coaching changes at USC and Notre Dame. We're going to talk a little bit about Notre Dame before we start talking about the games on the field. So, Kent, things we learned from rivalry week, besides the great games on the field, which made it one of the more fun days in college football in the last few years, off the field with coaching, crazy stuff happened as well. We talked a little bit about the 10,000-foot view earlier on in the week. We actually forgot to talk about Virginia Tech, which was an opening that has now been filled as well. But let's go back to your Notre Dame Fighting Irish and see what's going on over there.
Yeah, Vautech brought in the Penn State defensive coordinator, Brent Pry, and by all accounts, he's a guy that should do pretty well for that program, but we'll have to see because Fuente was a guy that a lot of people had high expectations for, too. For Notre Dame, it's being reported as of last night that Marcus Freeman will be named the Notre Dame head coach within the next 48 to 72 hours. The big part about that is not only does it keep the stability of the current recruiting classes, it keeps the stability of the current coaching staff, because after he was named that, we saw Tommy Reese will stay on as offensive coordinator. Mike Elston will stay on as D-line coach. The strength coach, which is, as we mentioned on the podcast the other day, is always vital to a staff. He'll remain on. Then you look at the running backs coach is staying. The safeties coach is staying. All the core people that Notre Dame wanted to probably stay are going to be locked in for next year's Notre Dame team. And for Marcus Freeman, he's a great recruiter. He's a guy that, you know, I think he'll look at the Notre Dame staff and say, there's no reason we can't up our recruiting profile and that we can't go after the higher end kids. With Brian Kelly, he was a great coach. He produced great teams. He had a good program, but he was more of a closer as a recruiter, where he let the staff do the work, and then he kind of came in, and if he needed to close on a recruit, he would try that. That's not going to be the way Marcus Freeman is. Freeman is going to be an aggressive recruiter. He's going to try to sell the Notre Dame message to top recruits that probably wouldn't have considered Notre Dame for the last 5 to 10 years, and you might not get all of those kids, but if you get a few of them interested, and you're going to playoffs, or you're going to, you know, BCS or New Year's Six games, that's going to be a nice sell to a lot of kids across the country. And then the youth of the staff now. Tommy Reese, 29-year-old offensive coordinator. Marcus Freeman, a 35-year-old head coach. Those are guys that when they walk into a player's living room, they can relate way more than a 60-year-old coach can. So I think on that level, I like it. It keeps the stability. I would not have been upset if it was Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell, but there would have been a longer short-term issue because the recruiting probably would have fell off. The staff would have been different. This does keep the thing stable, and I'm really excited about Marcus Freeman. I thought that when he was hired last year, when he chose Notre Dame over LSU, ironic a little bit that now LSU was trying to steal him away again, is that I was hoping if everything went well that maybe 2-3 years from now he would be a coach in waiting. It just so happened he got this opportunity early.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. Can I, by the way, my work trips this year have been Notre Dame, USC, both coaches gone, UNC, Virginia Tech, coach gone there, Oklahoma, Texas, coach gone at Oklahoma. One of my early NFL games was Titans versus Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury to Oklahoma. I doubt it, but the way that I've been going with teams that I've done work for this year, it seems like I'm a coach killer this year. Okay, Ken, let's transition to the field a little bit and talk about that amazing win for Michigan in Harbaugh, beating Ohio State and beating them soundly, running the ball down their throat. This is the signature win that Harbaugh has been looking for. The first time Michigan has beat Ohio State in a decade. They are one win away from the college football playoff. They're the number two team in the country for the CFP. This is everything that Jim Harbaugh has been working for. It has been working for at Michigan.
Oh yeah, it's a must win game eventually, in that you can't be the coach of Michigan and not beat Ohio State throughout your tenure. I don't care if you're winning every other game. I don't care if you're 7-4 every year. If you can't beat your rival on that rivalry, eventually, and we thought maybe a year or two ago that would be what would end up Harbaugh being fired or Harbaugh would leave is because he couldn't beat Urban Meyer and then Ryan Day. It was a big time win, and it wasn't a lucky win either. They dominated the line of scrimmage. Ohio State had zero tackles for loss, which is the first time in like two decades that they didn't have one tackle for loss in a game. And Michigan barely got in third downs. It was a lot of first and 10, second and 2, first and 10, second and 3. And all game, they were ahead of the sticks. They dominated up front. And not only does it put Michigan and say that we now beat Ohio State, but it also punched their ticket into Indianapolis, where they haven't been the entire time that there's been
a Big Ten. And then they can help out in the West with Iowa winning and Wisconsin losing. And I think Iowa's a little bit probably an easier matchup for them than the red-hot Wisconsin had been.
Yeah, because Iowa presents maybe a really good defense, but they don't have the offense that Wisconsin could potentially have. No, it still could be a tough game, and if you turn the ball over or you're forced to pass, that could be an issue. But for Michigan now, as you said, they're going to Indy. They have a very favorable matchup where they're a double-digit favorite. They're the largest favorite of all the Power 5 teams heading into this weekend. And then the other thing is, they win this game, they're the one or the two seed, almost definitely the two seed, which means now unless Alabama loses or beats Georgia, I should say, that means you avoid Georgia for the first round. And that most likely means you avoid Alabama altogether as well. So for Michigan, if they win against Iowa on Saturday after beating Ohio State, all of a sudden they're now against Oklahoma State or Cincinnati most likely, which means they're a touchdown plus favorite to get to the title game after for 7 years Harbaugh couldn't win the big game. He might end up winning three big games in a row and finding himself back in Indianapolis for the national championship in a little over a month.
Yeah, and he got Mel Tucker paid. Add that to his resume as well. Mel Tucker's big win this year over that Michigan team before kind of faltering down the stretch.
He got Mel Tucker paid, and then every coach afterwards decided, I want to get Mel Tucker money, and left their programs or are going to renegotiate.
Yeah, for real. Let's talk now about the Iron Bowl. This game means a lot and has had a lot on the line in years past. But it always just has these crazy games. This one was no exception. Four overtime. I hate calling it four overtime with the stupid overtime rules. It just it was a two overtime game, really, let's be honest. Two and a half overtime game, I guess you want to call it. But Alabama comes surging back in the fourth quarter after being down 10-0 to force overtime, and then wins it in that fraud four overtimes. But what an exciting game. Alabama, is now, has their path to the playoff, which is through Georgia. We knew that's what it was going to be, but now they needed to stay that one loss team. So, I mean, cracks in Alabama's armor. We've been talking about it all year. They're not the Alabama team of last year or the years past where they're just a dominant force.
Yeah, Alabama has really been mediocre the last month or so, barely surviving LSU, having to, stop them on the goal line and then stop them on a Hail Mary late in the game. And then you look at the Auburn game. That's a game they probably should have lost. Auburn had chances to close it out and couldn't get it done. And then even the week before that against Arkansas, Arkansas was passing the ball all over the field and was, within a touchdown late in that game and ultimately had chances to win as well. So for Alabama, that's where it's going to be interesting to see is, does them losing close to Georgia, is that enough to keep them in the playoff? Or because they haven't been dominant as an 11-1 team, will that eventually drop them out of the top four? It remains to be seen. But with Alabama and Nick Saban in general, he has struggles looking at his time at LSU and looking at his time at Alabama. He is well under 500 in his career at Auburn. I think he went 0-for at LSU, and then he's under 500 or right around 500 with Bama there. And that's a game that you have to give credit to Bama. They went 97 yards, forced overtime, had a receiver who's a freshman make the big play because Jameson Williams was out with targeting after that first half special teams hit. So all the credit goes to Bama to win the game. But Auburn, on the other hand, scores their touchdown in the first overtime. We saw come overtime three, they had a beautiful two-point play ready. Maybe you say with an injured quarterback in the less talented team at home, let's do that two-point play now, and it's either a win or a loss. And based on the way that two-point play was executed, odds are they probably pull it out in the first overtime and upset their rival, Alabama. But it was a great ending, great game. The Iron Bowl, I need to remember this going forward. that never trust that the Iron Bowl is going to be a blowout. Trust that, Alabama will show up.
I said in the preview, I was like, man, it doesn't matter. Auburn thinks they can come in and win this game every year, whether they're 6-5 or 11-0.
Yeah, especially in the Plains. I think in Tuscaloosa, it could get ugly here and there. But in Auburn, it always seems like it ends up being closer and more crazy than you could ever imagine.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've done all this head coaching talk with all the crazy moves. You look at a guy like Brian Harsin, and that feels like such a not interesting move, but like not as nearly as splashy. And then he goes 6-6, and you know it's a year one program there. But it's going to be interesting to see if Auburn start getting a little itchy trigger finger now too. I obviously he's not going anywhere this year, but you know the expectations are now win immediately, and so to come into a program that was already going 6-6 and even a little bit better, you know, to have that kind of step back year as your first year is a little bit worrisome, especially because it wasn't like Auburn doesn't have the talent there. So we'll see. Keep an eye on that one to see if that hot seat is picking up pretty quickly for Brian Harsin out there. Okay, Kent, let's jump into our six-pack of games, and then we'll go through the other championship games. But we have to start off with the team we just talked about, number one Georgia, number three Alabama, 4 o'clock Eastern on CBS. Georgia, almost a touchdown favorite here. And when was the last time Bama was almost a touchdown underdog in the SEC championship game?
I don't know if maybe it was the first Saban-Florida one that they ended up losing to Urban Meyer in 08. Outside of that, I couldn't imagine they've been an underdog in any others.
No.
And look, this is justified on paper. If you watch both these teams this year, Georgia is a 7-point or better team than Alabama. Now, we do know the horror show that Georgia has had over the years against Alabama, where Kirby Smart led the entire national championship game, ends up losing on that final play, literally never technically trailed and yet lost the game. And then in the SEC championship game the following year, they never trailed until the final minute. And then Jalen Hurts comes in for relief of Tua in that one and gets Alabama to win that SEC title game. And then last year, Georgia's also up early in the game. Alabama comes back and wins, I think, overwhelmingly by double digits. So Georgia has a lot to prove. This is a game where, as weird as it sounds, Alabama comes into this game with the underdog mentality, and I'm sure all week that's been their role, and Saban and his staff have probably done a good job of letting his team know that nobody expects them to win. But Georgia, if they go out and execute, they're going to win this game, and the big reason why is Alabama just doesn't seem to have any answer on the offensive line to be great at blocking the front seven of an opposing team, and then running the football with any consistency. And if you can't get the run game going against Georgia and you can't block their front seven, you have no chance. So I like Georgia to win this game. I'm almost definitely not going to bet it because I just don't want to lay 6.5 against Nick Saban. But if Georgia goes out and plays the way they've played the last 3 months, they're going to win this game. And I just don't think Alabama's offensive line will hold up over 60 minutes.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. Georgia's defense has just been such a juggernaut, and I mean the 49.5 seems a little bit low to me. That seems like a teasable number, but at the same time, I'm a little bit scared off on this game completely because I don't have a strong feel for it. A game I do have a little bit stronger feel for: number two Michigan versus number 13 Iowa, 8 o'clock Eastern on Fox in Indy. Michigan 10.5 point favorites here. 43.5 over under. We're looking at a rock fight a little bit. But here's the thing. Michigan just put up 42 against Ohio State running the ball. I think they're going to stick to that plan. I like the over in this game.
Yeah, I guess I would probably avoid. I mean, Iowa, if Iowa were to win this game, you have to think it's going to have to be near that 43 or lower because it's not going to be a shootout. But you're right. With Michigan's offense, I do expect them to move the ball pretty well. Maybe Iowa holds them to a couple field goals instead of touchdowns, and that's the difference. Michigan should roll in this game. It's a pretty good matchup for them. They're not a team that puts the ball in trouble a whole lot on offense, and for Iowa's sake, how does Iowa win these type of games? It's almost always three turnovers forced, four turnovers forced, a pick six, a scoop and score. Michigan just doesn't seem to give teams a lot of those this season, where they've been smart with Cade McNamara. The running game is good with Haskins and Corum, where they're not turning it over much. So I like Michigan to win this game fairly handily and then punch their ticket into the CFP.
Okay, here's another team that has some playoff aspirations. Number 5, Oklahoma State versus number 9, Baylor. noon Eastern on ABC. Oklahoma State, 5.5-point favorites here in Arlington, Texas at Jerry World.
Yeah, I think that if Oklahoma State wins, they're in. Even if Bama beats Georgia, then in that case, I think Cincinnati's out and Oklahoma State would be the four seed. I just look at this team and say, it's defense. You look at it, we joked last week, the Bedlam actually looked more like Bedlam than Vegas would have thought. Oklahoma State and Baylor are the best two defensive teams in the Big 12. Jim Knowles has done a terrific job with that Oklahoma State defense. A bunch of super seniors, a lot of guys that have been in that program for 5 years. And Baylor, on the other hand, without a starting quarterback in Gary Bohannon, they've had to go to a freshman. I don't like their chances in this one. I do think this will be close, and I feel like Baylor's not going to get blown out. But my guess would be Oklahoma State wins a nail-biter, and if they do, they punch their ticket to the college football playoff as well. The interesting thing is if Baylor wins this game and there's a lot more chaos, like Iowa wins, Georgia beats Bama, Cincinnati loses, does Baylor potentially have a chance to move into the top four? See, you would say that, but I don't agree with that. I feel like Baylor beating Oklahoma State and having quality wins throughout the season.
It's just too high to jump. You would, I mean, everyone in front of them would have to lose. And I just don't see it. Especially like if Michigan loses, then that's a great excuse to put Ohio in.
But you can't put Ohio State ahead of Michigan at this point, even if they lose. That wouldn't happen.
Yeah, they did it for Michigan State right away.
but when you win by 15 and dominate the team like that, I just don't think the committee values. I mean, the fact that it's 2-7 now, I think is very different. I think Baylor has a shot. If there's a lot of chaos, I would say Baylor could potentially find their way in if a lot of other things happen. I'm not saying it will, but I wouldn't completely discount Baylor as being out of it if everything in front of them goes their way.
Yeah, you know what's great to see is, you know, with potential of having Gundy, Harbaugh, Kirby Smart, you know, has been there before and, you know, is not exactly a newcomer, maybe potentially Luke Fickell. You're having all these guys that have become names, and especially in Gundy and Harbaugh's case, like elder statesmen of the sport a little bit, finally getting their first chance to punch a ticket. It really could be make for an exciting playoff. And it's great to just have a little bit of new blood. Not to say that, you know, Alabama's dominance is something special to see, and seeing it continue year after year. It's kind of like the Patriots. You may hate them, but you're damn impressed with them. But it would be cool to see some new blood in this playoff and get some other teams to punch their tickets. Let's talk about, you know, that fourth potential team, currently number four team in the country, playing against Houston, the number 21 team in the country, at 11-1 versus 12-0, the AAC championship. 4 o'clock Eastern on ABC. Cincinnati 10.5-point favorites here. Cincinnati needs to obviously win this to stay alive, but can they win this game they're in no matter what?
No, I don't think so, because if Georgia loses to Bama and Oklahoma State wins and Michigan wins, then Cincinnati's not getting in my opinion. I fully expect Oklahoma State to leapfrog over Cincinnati after this week if they win. So that means Cincinnati will be playing at the same time as the SEC title game, and they might just need to monitor that and make sure that Kirby Smart and his dogs are doing their job, because that's the one way, in my opinion, that Cincinnati doesn't get in at 13-0 is if it's Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma State, Alabama, because I just don't see their path to get in over any of those four teams. Houston will be a nice win, but it's not a win that's like a couple years ago when you had like Memphis against Cincinnati, right, where they were like two top 15 teams in this game, or a couple years where you had UCF playing against teams where they were like top 10. That would help Cincinnati a lot if Houston was ranked top 15. But overall, very good likelihood they're in if they win. But that's the one scenario where I think they would get hurt, is if Alabama pulls that upset and there's no other upsets along the way. This is a big game. It's a home game because the American does it where they don't play a neutral site game. So for both these teams, neither of them lost a conference game. Houston's only loss was at NRG Stadium in Houston against Texas Tech to open the season. Clayton Toon's a good quarterback. They can score. They're going to test the Cincinnati secondary, who, in my opinion, is the best set of corners of any team in the country. But for Cincinnati, they just always seem to find a way. But is this the game where it's so high stakes that then maybe Cincinnati just kind of falls down a little bit and doesn't live up to the hype.
We've seen a couple now, coaches, Lincoln Riley included, is like, you know, I got a golden parachute waiting for me, you know, elsewhere if this doesn't go well. And that's got to weigh a little bit heavily on the back of their minds for a Luke Fickell. He knows that, you know, maybe Notre Dame is sitting there waiting for him if he loses this game. So
The one thing that helps with Luke Fickell, though, is the fact that they are going to the Big 12 in 2 years. So if you do look at that, if Cincinnati closes this season strong, let's say they make the playoff and then lose, or God forbid they're 13-0, they don't get in, and then they win a Fiesta Bowl. All of a sudden, next year, they're going to be highly rated. They're going to be able to keep things going, I would imagine. And then you enter the Big 12 in 2023, where you're probably the most stable, best program from day one. And all of a sudden now, you can potentially be in the playoff as a Power 5 team. So I kind of think the Fickell sticking around at this point. I can see potentially, you know, you look at Matt Campbell at Iowa State, and maybe there's something that opens and he considers. But if I'm Fickell right now, you have to like where you're at with Cincinnati. You're an Ohio guy. You're clearly getting paid enough. That's not an issue. And I don't know if you want to join OU and go to the SEC, or if there's another opening somewhere that you want to go somewhere else. I'm pretty certain, at least for this go around, he'll stay at Cincinnati. And the fact that they're already a Big 12 team in the future, that's not a bad spot to be. And both of these teams, as much as we want to say Big 12 championship, American Athletic, Houston and Cincinnati, 2 years from today, will not be in the American Athletic. So these are two Power 5 programs for all intents and purposes right now.
Yeah. By the way, we were talking about playoff chaos. We forgot to talk about Notre Dame, which is basically sitting there right at six and, you know, a couple losses in front of them. They should get in. But how about the CFP director's weird comments about saying, you know, we're weighing the fact that they don't have a coach for putting them in the playoff? Like, what does that have to do with it? The coaches haven't played any plays on the field.
Yeah, especially it's also funny, too, that some people pointed out on Twitter, isn't the whole thing against Notre Dame and Brian Kelly is that Brian Kelly couldn't win the big game? Well, now he's gone, so wouldn't you think that that would actually improve their odds? So, yeah, I ultimately think that's probably another reason why Notre Dame is going to be making this Marcus Freeman decision public very soon, is you want to be able to go in the Sunday saying, we're stable, we have our staff, we have our guy, don't hold this against our players. So
why would you hold it against them whether they had a coach or not? Either way, I don't understand it at all. I mean, that was such a weird comment to make.
I could maybe get it if Kelly, like, let's say Kelly left and Freeman and Reese both joined him and they were gone, and now it's like you don't have a D coordinator, an offensive coordinator, or a head coach. But yeah, if it's just one coach, I mean, we've seen the last couple of years. Look at Saban last year. Saban missed the Georgia game because of COVID. His staff stepped in, and Sark did a good job in that one game as the interim coach. And, you know, one game, one coach, not the biggest deal in the world. But it's, you know, if it was a full season, then I get that. But yeah, that's a weird thing to throw in and say. And like I even joked and said, if I'm Notre Dame, Kyle Hamilton's missed the last five games, got hurt against SC on their first possession, I would come out and say Kyle Hamilton's fully healthy. He's expected to be in the playoff. In fact, he's so healthy, we might play him at receiver or slot corner. Like, just make stuff up at this point just to show the fact that there's nothing that should hold them back. If the committee thinks this version of them ends up being a top four, then yeah, not having Brian Kelly would be a really weird reason to just penalize them and drop them out.
Yeah, and I mean, Bama loses and then either Oklahoma State or Cincinnati loses and Notre Dame's in, right?
I would think so. Again, you just never know what way Bama loses and if the committee would say they might all decide even when Bama loses close, they're still a better team. But yeah, I don't see how Oklahoma State would get in ahead of them or even a Michigan team. So we'll find out on Sunday if that scenario happens. But I think Notre Dame would be in pretty good shape if one of Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, or Michigan lose, and then Georgia beats Bama. If that happens, pretty good likelihood that they're the four seed and they sneak in.
Wow, that'd be great to see. I don't know if you guys want to your last loss at home. I know obviously the playoff game wouldn't be at home, was against Georgia, and then your most recent loss was Cincinnati, both of which would be in the playoff with you. So
and then one of their most recent losses as a program, just because they've been pretty consistent, They did go into Michigan in 2019 and lose in Ann Arbor. Now they beat them in 2018. But yeah, I mean, also though, you are playing, if you're Notre Dame at this point, you're playing with house money. If you sneak in and you don't have a head coach, or your head coach left and his whole reasoning for leaving was he wants to win national championships, that's going to give the players and the coaching staff a lot of motivation.
Yeah, that I mean, I've seen a few articles already and tweets of everyone being like, everyone's rooting for Notre Dame now. And I'm not, because screw Notre Dame. But it would be very funny if Brian Kelly left and then they went on like that miraculous no one believes in us run and won the national championship without him. That would be like the Schadenfreude would be amazing.
I guess that happened. I mean, I'm too young to, I didn't realize that this was the case. But I guess years ago in college hoops, when Steve Fisher won the national title with Michigan in like the late 80s or early 90s, their head coach had been rumored or had talked to another program during the season, and Bo Schembechler was AD. He fired Michigan's head coach late in that season, and then Steve Fisher ends up winning the national title with that Michigan basketball team. So I guess that has, there is some precedent of a guy stepping in for a team in short order for college and actually end up winning the title. Now, March Madness is very different than college football in terms of how coaching is structured, but you know, maybe some way, somehow. I mean, look, if Notre Dame gets in, like you said, they've played Cincinnati recently. They've played Michigan recently. They've played Georgia twice recently, lost close both times. These aren't programs that Notre Dame is just going to step up with and say, we're afraid to go up against these guys, but they'll have a ton to prove.
Yeah, yeah. It'll. I'm excited to see how all of this plays out. Now let's get to the less consequential games in the Pac-12, and its effort to continue shooting itself in the foot has continued to put their championship games on Friday night. Number 10 Oregon, 10-2, versus number 17 Utah at 9-3, 8 o'clock Eastern Friday night in Las Vegas. Utah slight favorites here, just at 2.5 points, right at a field goal. Sure. We were talking about this one before. I think Utah wins, but it's tough to beat a team twice, and that kind of worries me a little bit. But Oregon just hasn't shown it to me. I like Utah to pull this one out, get a 10-win season, go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, if Utah does what it did 2 weeks ago, they're going to be in good shape. Both these teams kind of identify on being tough up front, but seemingly when they played, Utah was the tougher team up front. So I'm with you. I think Utah wins. We did see this matchup 2 years ago when it was up in Santa Clara on a Friday and Oregon waxed Utah, but it's different teams, different players. And this Utah team, since Cam Rising has come in, they've been the best team in the conference. So I would expect them to win this. And as you said, head to the Rose Bowl, most likely in a matchup against Ohio State on New Year's Day.
Yeah, and then we have the ACC championship game. By the way, Pac-12, you know, makes itself look respectable. It really isn't. But number 10 versus number 17, ACC, another conference where they just didn't have it this year. When Wake Forest is your best team, you got to be worried about that. Or Pitt, number 15 Pitt versus number 16 Wake Forest, 8 o'clock Eastern on ABC. Pitt is a field goal favorite right here, and I love Kenny Pickett. I'll go that far. And I guess that that influences my thoughts on this game. That being said, Pitt like doesn't win games convincingly to me. They have an L season, it feels like.
Yeah, I think for Pitt, the one thing about their defense is their pass defense is very poor. They have a good rush defense. They get after the quarterback. But Wake Forest is going to move the football. I mean, there's a reason that this total is 72.5. And Kenny Pickett, he's still in the Heisman discussion. And if he wins this game and has a good game, he'll probably get an invite to New York City next week. And he should, in my opinion, right now, you know, and we'll talk Heisman next week. But Kenny Pickett should be on some people's top three, certainly top fives. And now, of course, you only vote three people, but Kenny Pickett's been great this year. I think Pitt will pull this out close. It wouldn't shock me by any means if Wake Forest wins the game, and they've been that team I'm riding all year. They clearly over-succeeded. 10-2 is about as good as you can imagine them. But this will be a fun game. I got a lot of my family, my dad, my twin brother, a bunch of friends are all going to this game. They're driving down to Charlotte Saturday morning, spending the night there, head back on Sunday. And, you know, hopefully for Pitt's sake, they have a good contingent, because Wake Forest is the local team here. And you got to think their alumni, although tiny, will come and support their team. So these are two programs that aren't used to this stage. But for Pitt, I think they're the better team. If they go out and execute, I like their chances, and it'd be cool if Kenny Pickett works his way into that Heisman finalist discussion next week.
Yeah, we will see. All right, let's move on to some other championship games. Conference USA championship game, Western Kentucky at the no longer undefeated, no longer ranked UTSA Roadrunners, Friday night, 7 Eastern on CBSSN. Western Kentucky, 3-point favorites here, and it seems like the gas has run out of the rambling wreck that was UTSA.
Yeah, last week was they got worked against North Texas. Now, they had already clinched their division, and they had already clinched the home game for this championship at the Alamo Dome, but that was not a good scene. I hope they win. I want the Roadrunners to win. I'd love to bet them, but Zappy and this Western Kentucky team, they brought in that core group from Houston Baptist last year and just allowed the quarterback and the receivers to kind of settle in this year. And, you know, he's put up gaudy numbers and won't be a Heisman finalist, but has put up numbers that would be right in that mix. I think the Hilltoppers find a way to win this game, and 8-4 has been a great year for them. They win this and punch their ticket with a CUSA championship. It would be a huge accomplishment for Western Kentucky, who the last several years have been really up and down. There's not been consistency, but if UTSA wins this, it'd be the biggest win in program history. So it should be a fun Friday game to go along on a side TV with that Pac-12 title game. And frankly, late in this game, I wouldn't be at all surprised if I'm more focused on this game than I am the Pac-12 game.
It's just sad that we're going up against the Conference USA championship game. Let's go back to Saturday games where conference championship games should be. Utah State at number 19, San Diego State, 3 o'clock Eastern on Fox. Is this at the?
It's in Carson. It is. Yep.
Man, we keep on saying we need to get to this game. Obviously, this isn't the one to do it since we've got a full slate of championship games. But I am a little disappointed we didn't make it out there this year. This is a great season for San Diego State. They're going for 12 wins before their bowl game. And, you know, I like them in this game. They kind of showed me what they needed to last weekend at 9 a.m. on a Friday, that they can win, and they can win convincingly. So I like them to win this game.
I do too. I like Utah State in that they have a great passing game, and Tompkins is one of the best receivers in the country. They might scare San Diego State with a couple deep balls, but as a whole, they're going to have trouble stopping San Diego State's run, and that's what San Diego State does more than anything. They understand ball control. They are one of those old school teams where time of possession actually matters, field position matters. Yeah, it's in Carson. This will be the final San Diego State quote-unquote home game in Los Angeles, where they've played the last 2 years. Yeah, this is time-wise, you can't, at least I can't justify going to this game knowing the fact that the Big 12 title game's on, the SEC game's about to start. But for local, I hope the San Diego State fans come up and support their team for this game, because it's a challenge. If you look at it, it's been a challenge. Last year during COVID, no fans. This year, limited fans, with it being a two-hour trip from San Diego to get to Carson outside of LA. It would be nice if their fans show up and make this a real home field advantage. So I'm with you. I think San Diego State wins, and 12-1 for Brady Hoke and that staff would be an amazing year.
Yeah, really would be. Moving on now to the Sun Belt Championship, App State at number 24, Louisiana. No Billy Napier. Sonny Cumbie going to be there probably, I would guess.
Well, Napier's coaching in this game.
Oh, he is.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. He made it clear to Florida. You know, he's taking that job. He's working the recruiting trails, but he wanted to finish off this season, wanted to, you know, support this program in their home game for the Sun Belt title game. So, Good. So that's one reason I like them to win this, where App State's favored, and I know that they're probably the most stable program year in and year out in the Sun Belt. But when you look at Louisiana, it's a home game. This means everything to them. They were so good last year. They lost their opener to Texas this season. But outside of that, they've been very good. And I think that Napier will get this team focused. You know, he'll be able to say, let's go out on top. You know, I love you guys. Everyone gets why he's leaving to go to Florida. I mean, this is not one that you'd have to be crazy to be like, he should. And also, when they played App State earlier this year, they beat them by 28 points in Louisiana. Like, it was a blowout game that was one of those weeknight, Thursday night games, I believe. So there's not players on this Louisiana team that are going to expect not to dominate this game. So I'll take Louisiana to win the game and certainly take the 3 points.
Yeah, man, Louisiana's probably kicking themselves losing to Texas, looking back at it now
Right.
with how that Texas team performed. Okay, next we have Kent Brown State versus Northern Illinois, the MAC championship game in Detroit, Michigan, noon Eastern on ESPN. Kent Brown is a 3.5 point favorite.
Yeah, it seems like everything is setting up for Kent State to win this game. You know, they have the worst record of the two teams, but I'll go Kent State to win it. Crum's been a great quarterback for them. Their offense is electric, where they're trying to get more plays per game than any team in the country. And they've been good the last couple years at doing that. And, you know, I do think there's a bright future for this Kent State program in terms of they've really taken themselves and formed an identity. NIU has been so much better than expected this year. I think their season win total was like 3 or 3.5, and they won that very easily early in the year. So big game for the Huskies, a big game for the Golden Flashes. I'll go with Kent State here. I know you probably like Northern Illinois to get the
win.
I
like Northern Illinois. I'm friends with their AD, and so I have a soft spot in my heart. They weren't supposed to be here this year. They're picked last in the MAC, and they come out and make it to the championship game. So I'm rooting for the Huskies this year. But we'll see. You know, not. Let's just put it this way. I'm not going to be watching a ton of this game.
Exactly right. They're right. There are better games on, especially the Big 12 championship game happening at the same time. So I'll go out on a limb and say I'll have this game on, but it's not one that I'm going to have volume on, and it's not one that I'm probably going to care that much about. It will be interesting, though. Sean Lewis, their head coach, he might be the type of guy, if some dominoes still happen the rest of this coaching carousel, he might land a better job at some point. You know, he's a guy that teams want, fast-paced offense, exciting offense, and nobody's doing that at a higher rate than Kent State the last couple seasons. So just keep an eye on Sean Lewis, especially if he wins this game. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he gets a nice job somewhere this next month, whether it be at like a Mountain West program or, you know, a higher end group of five school.
Yeah, we shall see. Okay, and then you said there are other fun games to watch. This is not one of them. It's at 11 o'clock Eastern. Talk about Pac-12 after dark. USC, 4-7. Cal, 4-7. No bowl games on the line here. No pride on the line here. Cal, 4.5 point favorites here. Sounds like there's been some discord in the USC locker room with a lot of these guys that know, hey, maybe I'm not going to be on this team next year. with Lincoln Riley coming in and starting his recruiting push right away. Cal, 4.5 point favorites in that, sure. They're probably the more motivated team. They want to bounce back. They've had a tough 2 years with COVID and the way that Berkeley has kind of administered this stuff up there. So I think these guys are looking for a moral victory here more than anything. I like Cal to cover this game.
You would think so, especially with Will Cox this year being pretty annoyed at a lot of the COVID protocols there and costing his team some of these games. And, you know, his team's played hard, but when you have like three of your 12 games where like 25% of your roster can't make it due to nothing but nobody's fault except that you're in the Bay Area where the restrictions are a nightmare, that has to hurt. And I like Wilcox. I actually think Wilcox is a decent coach who, if he went somewhere else, would do a pretty good job. But yeah, I'll go Cal on this one too. I think that your Trojans are focused on 2022 at this point and the 2022 signing class that's coming up in a couple weeks with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, I was thinking about going up to the game, you know, seeing the new life breathed into the program. But the fact that it's an 8 o'clock game is just miserable, and I couldn't get home on Saturday night. If it was like a midday game, I was thinking about going up, watching it, watching some other games in the press box, but I'm going to pass on this one. So we'll skip our fun as hell team as they wait for their bowl assignment, but they finished the season top 10 with 10 wins. You love to see that. Teams we're riding. Kent, you got a big game this weekend for your 10-win regular season Wake Forest Demon Deacons. They're 3-point underdogs to Pitt, as we talked about. My Army, Black Knights of the Hudson, 8-3. They are now a push on their over-under. They need to beat Navy, who's 3-8. I expect them to. We don't have the line on it yet, but I expect them to be a touchdown plus favorite here. So Army trying to go over with the teams we're riding. Best bets, Ken.
Yeah,
Michigan
my best.
Versus Iowa. Oh, go ahead.
My best bet, I'm going to go with an under. I'm going to go with the SEC title game under. I just feel like with Georgia's defense and Alabama's offensive line being flawed, it's hard for me to believe that Alabama's going to get 24 points in this game. And for Georgia, they might not need 30 points. So this could be something where it's a 27-14 sort of game and it goes under the 49.5, or maybe it's a 27-21 game and it's barely under. So I'm going to go Georgia-Bama under the 49.5. And, you know, last week I doubled down on the best bet, lost Ohio State, won the Wake Forest bet against BC. So 5-9 on the year, not great, but it would be nice to close with 6-9 heading into bowl season. And of course, I guess we'll make a pick on Army Navy next week along with Heisman.
Sure. Yeah, I'm at 5-8. I did have a win with Iowa over Nebraska. I'm staying in the Big Ten, and I'm staying with Iowa over 43.5. I think that Michigan puts up the lion's share of those points, so I like that over 43.5. I love it. Tease, make it an NFL over. And then with our upset picks, can I did the same thing that you did with your best bet. I went 1-1, which still equals a loss. I won with Ole Miss outright, and then Kansas State crapped the bed against Texas. I don't know any other way to say it.
Well, speaking of crapping the bed, I went with North Carolina. They were up 9 with 1.5 left after making a field goal, and you thought game over. They let NC State score on like 2 plays, get an onside kick, and then score again to close that game. North Carolina looked to be, you know, this thing's always flawed, but once they went up 30-21, the ESPN tracker that shows percentage odds to win.
100.
Yeah, well, 99.9. So it's like, yeah, they're pretty much a lock to win this game at least, which would have been nice. It would have been a nice win to close out the rivalry week. And instead, the Tar Heels blow it and NC State comes back at home. So I'm going with Louisiana. As I said, they're home. They're 3-point dogs. They beat App State by 28 earlier this year. I think they would love to close this season out with a Sun Belt title and a 12-1 record. So Raging Cajuns, I'll ride Billy Napier's final game in Cajun country and beat App State.
Okay, and I'm going to go with Houston plus 10.5. I am down 295 on the season. This is a plus 350. I'm going purely for value here. There's got to be some weirdness over this weekend, and I think this might be the game. So I'm going to take that and try to get plus money as we head into the bowl season.
And you got to like Holgorsen, right? I mean, Holgorsen is a live dog, is a fun guy to bet.
For sure, for sure. Remember that they only lost one game this year to that Texas Tech opening week. All right, let's jump now to every game in 60 seconds. We were 46-15, 637, 175 on the year. Only 11 games this week. Kent, start us off.
Hilltoppers.
Utes.
Pokes.
NIU.
The LA Aztecs.
Cajuns.
UGA.
Top 4 undefeated Bearcats.
Pitt.
Go Blue.
And the Berkeley Bears.
And it's the biggest week in the history of Cincinnati Bearcats football. Nippert Stadium, they'll have a watch party there. Let's have the Bearcats play us out.